Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Transgenders are in the news on an almost daily basis. With the legalization of so-called same-sex marriage, and Bruce Jenner announcing he's really a she, the issue has exploded. We hear about children as young as 3 or 4 announcing they are really the opposite sex. Puberty blockers for older kids are being prescribed to stop the natural process of puberty. In some cases, healthy body parts are removed from teens in order for them to live as the gender they have decided they really are. Are these children and adults who announce they are really another gender, are they right or dreadfully wrong, and how will living in a culture that is pushing their acceptance impact their lives and our nation as a whole? My guest today is Dr. Michelle Critella. She's the president of the American College of Pediatrics. And I'll just let the audience know that this is part one of a two-part program, and that way we can do justice to this topic. Thanks, Dr. Critella, for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on. I just have to make a quick correction. It's our organization is the American College of Pediatricians.
I'm sorry, that's what I have written down even. Thank you for correcting me. I can't read what I have written down here.
But just to let your listeners know who we are a national organization of pediatricians and other health professionals who care for infants, children, and adolescents. And what distinguishes us from the larger and better-known Academy of Pediatrics, what distinguishes us is that we base our policies on science and what is best for all children, regardless of political correctness.
Political correctness, is that happening in the country?
A little bit. And actually, I want to bring this out early in the program. Mm-hmm. On the issue of transgender children is not a right-wing conservative invention in the sense of the opposition just coming from us. And it's very important for listeners to understand that there are liberal gay affirmative professionals who are very critical of these bathroom policies and the notion that children are born transgender. And I do want to mention there is a website. It is called youthtranscriticalprofessionals.org. youthtranscriticalprofessionals.org. And, again, our listeners and conservatives will not agree with all of their ideological premises, but it's important for us to understand that the concept of first do no harm bridges the political divide.
Right. Mm. Wow. Yeah, because you never hear about those in the news, this group.
You don't hear about them in the news, and it's largely because if they come out of the closet, they will be shot down. It's professional suicide for them.
Wow.
But they are starting to come out. Some have reached out to me, and it's all about the children. They're basically saying, Dr. Critella, we don't agree with you on pro-life matters and maybe some other issues, but we're with you on this one.
Okay.
We want to protect children.
So they fully recognize the problem that this is for kids. And the American Psychological Association, and you said your organization is based on science, so we can assume from that the American College of Pediatricians doesn't or isn't?
The American College of Pediatricians, we're looking at science and at what is best for children. The American Academy of Pediatrics shapes or interprets the science to support politically correct views such as being pro-abortion, pro-contraception for kids, children being born gay or transgender, I'll give you a less of a hot button example of the Academy of Pediatrics, American Academy of Pediatrics, being sort of politically correct or expedient. There's the issue of should very young children before the age of two be playing on iPhones or in front of TV or computer screens?
Mm-hmm.
Science-wise, as far as science is concerned, and common sense, there is no benefit to any child under the age of two having any amount of screen time. I don't care if it's baby Einstein. It's not good for the kids.
Right.
What children two and under need most, especially in infancy, is human contact,
mm-hmm.
eye-to-eye contact.
So
that's common sense, that's science.
Mm-hmm.
The Academy of Pediatrics used to be on board with that, used to say, yeah, parents ages two and under, your kids, forget the screen time. But very recently, just in the last few months, they came out with a statement that said, well, you know, technology, it's so prevalent. It's real tough for parents to have a zero tolerance. So, you know, just minimize it as much as possible.
So my question is, how much money did they give from the Gates Foundation? I mean, you know, that's what I immediately think of, money. Did the organization get money?
And this is another issue. Which,
uh-huh.
And it's not just the AAP, which is the American Academy of Pediatrics. They do. They get money from Big Pharma. They got money from Coca-Cola recently.
Wow.
But also the American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, the AMA, all of your major medical groups, they're not just getting money from their membership. They're getting big industry backing.
They're getting
them.
Lobbying money, basically.
They're getting lobbying
wow.
money. We do not.
That explains a lot.
It is a factor. It is a factor.
So when you talk about membership, do you guys have membership? How does that work between the two organizations? Again, let me get this straight in my head. You're the American College of Pediatricians.
Right.
Okay.
So
the other one's the American
Academy of Pediatrics.
Okay.
Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics is about 80 years old.
Okay.
And they were the only gig in town before 2002.
Okay. And they don't like...
We were born in 2002.
Okay, and they don't like you infringing on their territory, I would assume.
They try to ignore us as much as possible and then belittle us as much as possible after that. And what happens with the American Academy of Pediatrics, seeing as, you know, they've been around for 80 years,
mm-hmm.
they're extremely well known, they are backed by Big Pharma and all other bunch of other big money, they also are automatically fed every single pediatric medical resident in every single pediatric residency program across the nation.
Mm.
Pediatric residents who have graduated med school, so they have an MD after their name, but they're in pediatric residency, automatically get a free membership in the American Academy of Pediatrics.
And is that lifetime membership?
No, you have to... you eventually start paying fellow fee. They have different categories, but initially, membership is automatic, and it's not coming out of the individual's pocket.
Okay, wow. So that's an incentive for the pediatrician to stay in the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Right, and the AAP does do, I don't mean, they do good work. They do significant amount of continuing medical education, and they do promote many sound policies, but on social issues
mm-hmm.
that are political hot buttons, that's where they're failing. They really are failing.
And we began to see this with, and this is totally off the subject we started with, but we'll get back to it in a minute, but with the HPV vaccination.
Yes. Now, we are both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American College of Pediatricians state that the HPV vaccines that are available are effective in preventing HPV infection.
Okay.
And we are both in favor of offering it.
Okay.
Where we differ is that the American College of Pediatricians says We do not believe in mandating this vaccine for school attendance.
Mm-hmm.
For the simple reason that it is a sexually transmitted infection, and obviously there are other ways to avoid it, as opposed to something like the flu or pertussis, etc.
That you can get with someone sneezes on you.
Mm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, back to the transgender issue. Wow, this has been interesting, though, comparing the two. So when we talk about gender identity disorder, the American Psychiatric Association Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM, their fourth edition states, quote, in adolescents and adults, preoccupation with cross-gender wishes often interferes with ordinary activities, relationship difficulties are common, and functioning at school or at work may be impaired, unquote. Now, that's the fourth edition. In May 2013, the APA released DSM-5. And how does it deal with the issue of transgenderism? Were there any changes?
Okay. Well, I'd like for us to you know, language is very important. So I would like for us as much as possible to just get rid of the word transgenderism, because that gives it credibility.
Okay.
And it really, as if it's an entity, and it really is not.
Okay.
So as far as the American Psychiatric Association and the latest edition of the DSM, the DSM-5. you see the influence of politics, because they no longer call it gender identity disorder. It had been known as gender identity disorder since 1980, but it is now called gender dysphoria. And which basically they state is when an individual has a conflict between their experienced gender and the gender assigned at birth. Now, again, this is political language, because number one, you are not assigned a gender at birth. You're also not assigned a sex at birth. You're born with it. You are born with your sex.
But according
that
to them,
it's a biological.
Well, true.
Thing.
According to them, though, we're assigned a sex at birth.
But
you know,
but that's not reality.
True. I
so
totally understand.
So again, what our side's job is to do is to stick with reality.
Yeah.
So in essence, in the DSM-5, what it talks about is that children or adults who are born, let's say, male, think that they are something other than male and have distress over it. So it's not that their thoughts don't mesh with reality. The problem is that they are distressed. They are so distressed that their functioning is impaired. That's what makes it a disorder that needs to be treated.
Okay, now when... So is it still considered a mental illness then? I mean, gender dysphoria is...
But gender, here's what's going on.
Okay.
Gender dysphoria is still listed in the book of mental disorders. But it is only considered a mental disorder if the person is distressed by the discrepancy between their thoughts and feelings and their actual biology.
So if a boy is comfortable,
if they are happy about it. So for example, Caitlyn Jenner. Although I've heard some rumors that
he's not satisfied. Yeah,
that Caitlyn is having issues. But if we assume what we're being told, that Bruce transitioned, became Caitlyn, and is happy as a clam, the APA would say Bruce
nothing
Jenner
wrong.
No longer has gender dysphoria, he has transitioned and he's satisfied, no mental disorder. But you know, in terms of children, if you have a child who consistently and persistently insists they are the opposite sex, and they are coming up to puberty and they are so emotionally distressed over the thought of having secondary sex characteristics develop, that distress qualifies it as a disorder.
So,
and they need to do that, because if they don't call it a disorder in some way, insurance does not have to be forced to pay.
Okay. So forced to pay for the counseling or whatever
to
else. Forced
to pay for the counseling, forced to pay for puberty blockers, uh-huh. forced to pay for cross-sex hormones, forced to pay for surgery to cut off healthy body parts.
Right. So basically that term, gender dysphoria, is in the DSM-5. So that it's considered a disorder for those who are uncomfortable with who they're born as, and
right.
that's terminology is in there to force insurance companies to pay for the medications and,
yes.
and stuff to, wow.
So they got rid of the word disorder.
Mm-hmm.
They used to call it gender identity disorder.
Yeah.
They got rid of the word disorder because they wanted to eliminate the stigma
of a mental illness
for those who've transitioned and minimize the stigma of those who are distressed by it as well.
Wow. You know, increasingly we see stories about children as young as 3 or 4
mm-hmm.
who identify as the opposite sex, and their parents are in support of them continuing that denial of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they're following the advice of counselors they have taken their children to, and this is something you're talking about with the insurance issue,
yeah.
that counselor is being paid by the insurance company, by and large,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, can parents, since the APA has done this, can parents trust those APA counselors who are, I guess they're all mostly under the umbrella of the APA?
Yes.
You know, can...
They are under, yeah.
Okay, so
I mean,
parents
unfortunately, and I just, in another month or so, I have an article that's in press, peer-reviewed article in press for
mm-hmm.
the Journal of the American Physician and Surgeon, that basically details how this debate is being suppressed among physicians, academics, and mental health professionals. What we are seeing is really and truly an activist movement propelling this whole thing. It's a combination of physicians who are very much in favor of transition, of labeling children
mm-hmm.
and getting them on this path, a media that is all impressed and thrilled and just ready to carry the ball and lionize these children and parents for following this path. And it's very dangerous. It is truly dangerous. So I guess to get back to your point, if there is, when you have a family who is concerned about their child, yes, they should still seek out
mm-hmm.
counseling, but they should not, you know, if they come to a counselor or a therapist who says, well, this is how your child was born, and I encourage you to go ahead and help your child impersonate the opposite sex, you can say, thanks, but no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
A second opinion.
Wow, yeah. Parents need to be very careful because almost,
yeah.
I think, consistently, as I've read these articles about these 3 and 4-year-old children who think they're the opposite sex, almost consistently, when parents are supportive of it, it is because of the advice that they've received from a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's also, it's truly, you, it's in the air. You know, what you're supposed to do. It has become sort of part of our culture now.
Yeah.
I mean, if it hadn't, I don't know, even a year ago, I don't think President Obama could have gotten away with what he came out with.
No, because you see the more high-profile people like Bruce Jenner, who's
mm-hmm.
the poster child right now of this,
right,
this movement.
So it's truly a cultural phenomenon that's going on here.
Yeah.
It's not about science. It's not about what's best for children. It's Paul McHugh actually has described it as a large-scale cult.
Wow, that's a good way to put it. Now, a little bit ago, you said don't use the term transgenderism. What should I use instead? Gender dysphoria?
I talk about children. I talk about the kids having gender dysphoria,
or
confusion about their gender.
Okay. Now, when it comes to adults, just what term should use the same thing?
I talk about men who are gender confused and have transitioned.
Okay.
I personally, as a pediatrician, as president of the College of Pediatricians, I tend to focus just on the kids and talk just about those issues.
Right.
But separately, because there's no a trans woman. No, there's no such thing. There is a man who has taken estrogen, is still on estrogen, has had some surgeries. It's a man who has been feminized.
And some of them haven't had surgeries. They've just taken the hormones.
Some of them have just done hormones. That's right. There are many, many men who have just done the hormones, and they still have their penises intact.
And, of course, we have the pregnant woman from Oregon. You know,
And with regard to that.
Pregnant man. No, go ahead.
Pregnant man, yes. I mean, this is a woman.
Yeah.
She is a woman. Mm-hmm. She is not a man. She is a woman who went on testosterone to become masculinized.
Yeah.
And
nothing else, and became the world's first pregnant man. Wow!
Right.
Now, and Mark, we'll just briefly get started on this with this first half of the program. But in March this year, the American College of Pediatricians published a short statement titled "Gender Ideology Harms Children," and you're going to be releasing a full statement this summer. Mm-hmm. And how? The title ideology, harms children. Okay.
Because that's truly what's going on here. You know, the bathroom wars, mm-hmm. it's not about the bathroom. It's really about teaching little kids from pre-K forward that just because you have a penis doesn't mean you're a boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because you don't have a penis means does not mean that you're a girl. This is incredibly harmful to children. I mean, it's
totally confusing.
It's who you are. This is the core. You are born a boy or a girl. This is about your identity, your core. You don't mess with that. That's the bottom line.
That's for sure. Mm. Well, we'll get to the 8 points the next program. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Sure, absolutely.
Look forward to speaking to you again on this topic. So.
Okay.
So we'll cut it off here.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323. Or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.